We are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 87, titled The Prayers of the Personified Vedas. For discussion, we have a part of Shloka 25 today, and then on the subsequent 2 days, because the purport is a long purport, other 2 speakers will cover the rest of the purport. So Shloka number 25.
जनिम असत सत्वमृतिम मुतात्मनीये च भिदाम विपणमृतम स्मरन्ति उपदिशन्ति तारोपतये त्रिगुणमया पुमानिति भिदा यदबोधकृता त्वयिन ततः परत्र स भवेद बोधरसे जनिमसत सत्वमृतिम् उतात्मनीये च भिदाम् विपणमृतम् स्मरन्ति उपदिशन्ति त आरुपीतै त्रिगुणमय पुमानिति भिदा यदबोधकृता त्वयि न ततः परत्र स भवेद बोधरसे जनिम सत सतो मृतिम् मुतात्मनीये च भिदाम् विपणमृतम् स्मरन्ति उपदिशन्ति तारुपीतै त्रिगुणमय पुमानिति भिदा यदबोधकृता त्वयि न ततः परत्र स भवेद बोधरसे जनिम सत सत्वमृतिम् मुतात्मनीये च भिदाम् विपणमृतम् स्मरन्ति उपदिशन्ति तारुपीतै त्रिगुणमय पुमानिति भिदा यदबोधकृता परत्र स भवेद बोधरसे जनिम सत सत्वमृतिमुतात्मनीये च भिदाम् विपणमृतम् स्मरन्ति उपदिशन्ति तारुपीतै त्रिगुणमय पुमानिति भिदा यदबोधकृता त्वयि न ततः परत्र स भवेद बोधरसे माताजी प्रणमृतम् स्मरन्ति उपदिशन्ति तारुपीतै मयम् पुमानिति भिदा यदबोधकृता न ततः परत्र स भवेद बोधरसे
We'll read word to word translation and purport by the humble disciples of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Janim, creation, asataha, of the manifest world. So this manifest world is from atoms. So the translation of this word is of the manifest world, which is from atoms. Sata, of that which is eternal. Mritim, destruction. Uta, also. Atmani, in the soul. Ye, who. Cha, and. Bhidam, duality. Vipanam, mundane business. Ritam, real. Smaranti, declare authoritatively. Upadishanti, teach. Te, they. Arupitaihi, in terms of illusions imposed on reality. Three. Guna, of the material modes. Maya, composed. Puman, the living entity. Iti, thus. Bhida, dualistic conception. Yat, which. Abodha, by ignorance. Krita, created. Tvai, in you. Na, not. Tataha, to such. Paratra, transcendental. Saha, that ignorance. Bhavet, can exist. Avabodha, total consciousness. Rase, whose composition? Translation. Supposed authorities who declare that matter is the origin of existence, that the permanent qualities of the soul can be destroyed, that the self is compounded of separate aspects of spirit and matter, or that material transactions constitute reality. All such authorities base their teachings on mistaken ideas that hide the truth. The dualistic conception that the living entity is produced from the three modes of nature is simply a product of ignorance. Such a conception has no real basis in you, for you are transcendental to all illusion and always enjoy perfect total awareness. Purport. The true position of the Supreme Personality is a sublime mystery, as is also the dependent position of the Jiva soul. Most thinkers are mistaken in one way or another about these truths, since there are countless varieties of false designations that can cover the soul and create illusion. Foolish conditioned souls submit to obvious delusions, but the illusory power of Maya can easily subvert the intelligence of even the most sophisticated philosophers and mystics. Thus, there are always divergent schools of thought propounding conflicting theories concerning basic principles of truth. So in the next paragraph which I'm going to read, there are these different opinions about what is the truth. In traditional Indian philosophy, the followers of Vaisheshika, Nyaya, Sankhya, Yoga and Mimamsa philosophies all have their own erroneous ideas which the personified Vedas point out in this prayer. The Vaisheshikas say that the visible universe is created from an original stock of atoms, Janim Asata. As Kanada Rishi's Vaisheshika Sutras 7.1.20 state, Nityam Parimandalam, that which is of the smallest size, the atom, is eternal. Kanada and his followers also postulate eternality for other non-atomic entities, including the souls who have become embodied and even a supreme soul. But in Vaisheshika cosmology, the souls and the super soul play only token roles in the atomic production of the universe. Srila Krishna Dvaipayana Veda Vyas criticizes this position in his Vedanta Sutras 2.2.12. Ubhayathapi na karmatas tad abhavah. According to this sutra, one cannot claim that at the time of creation, atoms first combine together because they are impelled by some karmic impulse adhering in the atoms themselves. Since atoms by themselves, in their primeval state, before combining into complex objects, have no ethical responsibility that might lead them to acquire pious and sinful reactions. Nor can the initial combination of atoms be explained as a result of the residual karma of the living entities who lie dormant prior to the creation, since these reactions are each jiva's own and cannot be transferred from them even to other jivas, what to speak of inert atoms. Alternatively, the phrase janim asatah can be taken to allude to the yoga philosophy of Patanjali Rishi, in as much as his yoga sutras teach one how to achieve the transcendental nature of Brahmanhood by a mechanical process of exercise and meditation. Patanjali's yoga method is here called asat because it ignores the essential aspect of devotion, that is surrender to the will of the Supreme Person. As Lord Krishna states in Bhagavad Gita 17.28, Ashraddhaya hutam dattam tapastaptam kritam chayat asad iti uchyate partha na cha te pritya no iha. Anything done as sacrifice, charity or penance without faith in the Supreme, O Son of Pritha, is impermanent. It is called asat and is useless both in this life and in the next. The Yoga Sutras acknowledge the personality of Godhead in an oblique way, but only as a helper whom the advancing yogi can utilize. Ishvara pranidhanat va. Devotional meditation on God is yet another means of achieving concentration. Yoga Sutra 1.23. In contrast, Badarayan Vedavyasa's philosophy of Vedanta emphasizes devotional service not only as the primary means to liberation, but also as identical with liberation itself. Vedanta Sutra 4.1.12 says, Aprayanat tatrapi hi drishtam. Worship of the Lord continues up to the point of liberation and indeed goes on in the liberated state also, as the Vedas reveal. So, His Holiness Hridayanandas Goswami Maharaj has dealt with two philosophies. The third one is Nyaya. Gautam Rishi in his Nyaya Sutras proposes that one can attain liberation by negating both illusion and unhappiness. Dukkha janma pravritti dosha mithya jnananam uttara uttarapaye tad antarabhavad apavarga. By successively dispelling false conceptions, bad character, entangling action, rebirth and misery, the disappearance of one of these allowing the disappearance of the next, one can achieve final liberation. Nyaya Sutra 1.1.2. But since Nyaya philosophers believe that awareness is not an essential quality of the soul, they teach that a liberated soul has no consciousness. The Nyaya idea of liberation thus puts the soul in the conditions of a dead stone. This attempt by the Nyaya philosophers to kill the soul's innate consciousness is here called Sato Mritim by the personified Vedas. But the Vedanta Sutra 2.3.17 unequivocally states, Gyota Eva, the Jiva soul is always a knower. Although the soul is in truth both conscious and active, the proponents of Sankhya philosophy wrongly separate these two functions of the living force, Atmani Yecha Bhidam, ascribing consciousness to the soul Purusha and activity to material nature Prakriti. According to Sankhya Karika 19 and 20, Tasmacha Viparyasat Siddham Sakshitvam Purushasya Kaivalyam Madhyastham Drashtratvam Akritrabhavascha. Thus, since the apparent differences between Purushas are only superficial, being due to the various modes of nature that cover them, the Purusha's true status is proven to be that of witness, characterized by his separateness, his passive indifference, his status of being an observer, and his inactivity. So these are some philosophies other than Vedanta, and the personified Vedas are saying how supposed authorities who are giving their own opinions, but they are not the correct opinions. So very philosophical purport, and more so to explain it, but with the mercy of all of you, we'll try.
Om Ajnanatimirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupaha Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrinda Vaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpataru Bhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhyayevacha Patitanam Pavane Bhyo Vaishnave Bhyo Namo Namaha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nitinamine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna. A diamond can be perceived from different angles. And depending on different angles, you can see different colors. Different shades of light being reflected. So similarly, the Supreme Absolute Truth can be perceived from different points of view. And from that limited perspective, that is the truth. So there is a relative truth and there is an absolute truth. So relative truth is something that is relative to the position, relative to the time in which we are discussing it. Brahmaji in this world, in this universe has four heads, so we have four dimensions. Length, breadth, depth and time. So this is how some truth, some object, some person, some situation can be described fully. You describe the location in terms of XYZ axis and also you mention the time. So this is the relative truth. Who am I? So I say, I am the son of such and such person. And I am the brother of such and such person. So my being a son of somebody has to be qualified with the person whose son I am. My being the brother of somebody has to be qualified by mentioning the person whose brother I am. So then I am a brother of so and so. That's relative truth. This is a truth that I am a brother of somebody but relative to this person. I am the son of somebody relative to that. And then there is absolute truth. So absolute truth is it does not depend. So even in general terms, when you say God is great. So if God is great in all situations. God is great in all circumstances. In all locations at all times. So that's why it is called the absolute truth. It does not depend on a particular situation. So ordinary people keep fighting about relative truths. And here we see great souls fighting about absolute truth. If we just think about it, even these two eyes that we have, belonging to the same person. Even they don't see things the same way. After this class, just for a moment, you close each one of your eyes and successively just interchange. You will see even some objects that are very close to you, their locations change a little bit when you see it only with one eye. So the interesting thing is, two eyes of the same person cannot see the same thing, even in the same location at the same time. That's how relative we are. So it's not surprising that two people, when they discuss relative truths of this world, they keep fighting, they have arguments. And then when somebody surpasses through all the relative truths, he surpasses through all the relative situations, then he says, oh, I am no longer bounded, I am no longer disturbed by the dualities of this world. I have gone beyond the dualities of this world. Now I am trying to focus on the absolute truth. But since the duality is not in the objects outside, the duality is within us. How are we in this material world? Spirit covered by matter. This is the first duality. We are pure spirit souls right now, embodied by matter, subtle and gross. So our entry into this material world was characterized by duality. Here is a spirit soul, cover it up with gross and subtle matter. So if duality has started from the moment we have come to this material world, imagine how long will it last? Till the moment we leave this material world. As long as we are here in the material world, who can say I am free from dualities? Only somebody is on the purest platform of spiritual consciousness. So, there are arguments, people keep arguing, people keep saying my view is the only view, my view is the right view. And for that moment, both of these personalities who are arguing, they have very strong belief. Yes, based on these reasons, based on these arguments, and we saw some of those arguments, very polished, very refined arguments. Just some days back, I was talking with one sadhaka devotee. So he started to practice Krishna consciousness for the last 1 year. Struggling with his senses. And then we had a discussion, and he was saying how Prabhupada mentions in his books how we should follow the principles of chanting 16 rounds of Hare Krishna Mahamantra and also following the four regulative principles. So he was saying, I have difficulty following the four regulative principles. So in the course of discussion, we were mentioning to him, that's a universal truth. That's not something special that's coming from you. Yes. Kali Yuga souls means everyone is struggling with the four regulative principles. The point is, Krishna is kind enough to allow you to chant the holy names even if you are not able to chant, follow the four regulative principles. So go on. And based on the mercy that you will receive from Krishna by chanting his holy names, then you will be able to control your senses and follow the four regulative principles. But somehow, you know, he is from a very ambitious college. So, you know, that ego does not allow. I said, no, but, you know, Prabhupada is saying that both these things are important, chanting and following. So I say, yes, I am not debating that. We have to come to that standard of purity, but how will you come to that standard of purity on your own? Instead of that, just pray to Krishna. That Krishna, I am ready to follow your recommendation in the Gita, Satatam Kirtayantumam. I'll chant your holy names. Meanwhile, seeing my tiny efforts, just give me some mercy so that I can control my senses. Then he was saying, you know, he researched on the internet. That's what people do. So there is some book called The Struggles, The Other Struggles of a Man, something like that. I didn't take it. I didn't register it very nicely. So he was saying, this is the struggles of a person who was fighting with his inner desires and his inner struggles, inner contaminations. So I was thinking, you know, I'm telling him to chant attentively, hear Harikatha attentively. And it's just not entering him. And he's saying, I researched and then I found out this book which describes the struggles of a person. So should I read that book? Because somebody told me it describes a person's struggles. So I said, yes, you can read it. But finally, that is not our shelter. That's like a tool. So you read it, get inspiration, but finally the process will always remain You have to come and sit here and chant. One day in a week, one day in a month, you have to come and beg. Then he said, this is some kind of escapism, is it not? That I'm not fighting with my desires. I said, I'm not asking you to not fight with your desires. Take suitable weapons before fighting with your desires. Take Krishna's mercy in your hand. Take Krishna's blessings in your hand. Follow the Acharya's words. With those weapons you fight with Maya. If you were fully equipped to fight with your dirty desires in your heart, what made you a victim of these desires 3 or 4 years back when it all started? So if you were capable enough, you're strong enough, you could have conquered over your desires 3 or 4 years back. You did not. You could not. You are a slave. And now being a slave, you're still arguing, can I do this on my own? So I'm just telling him the simple point. You do what you want to do. You fight. I'm also fighting. But have suitable weapons. Yes. Don't arm yourself with a blunt sword. Have a sharp sword. Jnana Asina. Mercy of Krishna. But somehow it was very difficult for him to accept. So then I was thinking, more and more people are becoming egoistic. More and more it is difficult to accept the simplest process given by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Lord Chaitanya is saying, chant the holy names together with devotees. Sit for Harikatha together with devotees. In this way, you'll attract the mercy of Krishna, because Krishna is saying the whole world is going in one direction. This one crazy soul is going in another direction. He's swimming against the current. Everyone else is saying, enjoy the senses. This one person, out of some faith in Guru, out of some faith in the Acharyas, is saying, no, I'll not enjoy the senses. Just seeing that indomitable will, just seeing that tendency to go against the current, Krishna is pleased. That mercy of Krishna can enable the most lamest person to cross beyond the mountains. Even the dumb can start speaking. But it's difficult. So, anukulyasya sankalpo pratikulyasya varjanam. In the outside world today, it's very important for us to become very intelligent. We have to be very intelligent. We have to use our buddhi. Unless you are an intelligent person, how will you earn money? How will you survive in this world? But if it is anukul in a particular situation, you use your buddhi. You use your intelligence. You use your logical faculties. Argumentative faculties, this way, that way. But if it is pratikul, then the use of the same intelligence should be that you give up that intelligence. So I was telling him, you are such an intelligent student. You are in one of the topmost colleges. And you are using your intelligence to get so many credits, merits in your college. This is one place where I am requesting you, logic won't work. It is working, but you are not able to see that logic. Why? Because you already failed fighting with Maya. She is already much more stronger than you can think. But since he is an achiever and, it's very difficult. So, what is bhakti? Krishna is saying, if somebody wants to get satisfaction in this life, how do you get satisfied? Yayatama suprasiddhati. What is that? Savai pumsam parodharmo yato bhaktir adhokshaje. Ahetuki apratihata yayatama suprasiddhi. How to get satisfaction? Serve the adhokshaj. Now interestingly in this shloka, Suta Goswami, Vyasdev, Shukdev Goswami, the previous speakers of Bhagavatam, they could have used thousands of other words that are also names of Krishna. So the mood of this shloka is, render service to Krishna, and by rendering service to Krishna without any motive, without stopping, you will get satisfaction in your life. So he could have used words like Deen Bandhu, Daya Sindhu, Karuna Sindhu, something. That Krishna is so merciful, just if you serve him, he'll give you satisfaction. That's what you're searching for. But he uses the word Adhokshaj. And Adhokshaj has a very special meaning. Adhokshaj means Krishna who is beyond the senses. So of all the names of Krishna, why is this word being used? Adhokshaj Krishna. You serve Adhokshaj Krishna who is beyond the senses, whom you cannot see with your eyes, whom you cannot smell with your nose, whom you cannot describe with your words, whom you cannot hear with your ears. You serve this Krishna. How? Without fail. Unceasing. Without any motivation. And in this way you'll get satisfaction. Okay. So what is this process called? This process is called bhakti. Yato bhaktir adhokshaj. You do bhakti to adhokshaj. So then the question is, what is bhakti then? You'll have to define bhakti. So what is bhakti? Sarva upadhi vinirmuktam tatparatvena nirmalam. Now the interesting line is the third line. Rishikena rishikesha sevanam bhakti ruchyate. So how to get satisfaction in life? You do bhakti to adhokshaj, who is beyond the senses. And what is bhakti? Rishikena rishikesha sevanam. You serve Krishna with your senses. So senses are this worldly. Senses are these dull senses. The eyes, the ears and so on. So essentially, the meaning of this shloka is, Krishna is otherworldly, Krishna is transcendental. That specific adhokshaj word is used. But you serve that transcendental Krishna with this worldly senses. If you can serve the otherworldly Krishna, who is beyond the grasp of the senses, with your senses that are very much a gift only in this world. Because these eyes, these flesh eyes are not there in the spiritual world. This is a special, I could say, burdensome benediction. Only in this world. But interesting part of Krishna's mood is, he's adhokshaj, but he allows you to serve him with akshaj. That is why that specific word adhokshaj is used there. It means if we actually understand some of these shlokas, we will be impelled to serve Krishna. We will understand how kind is Krishna, that Krishna cannot be seen with the senses, cannot be perceived by the senses, but the only way to get satisfaction in life is to start, attempt serving Krishna with these senses. Come and attempt to see Krishna with his eyes. Come and attempt to hear Krishna with his ears. Come and attempt to taste some prasad that is offered to Krishna, and so on. So just by these attempts, yato bhakti radokshaja, and what is bhakti? Rishikena rishikesha sevanam. How simple can it get more than this? So this is Krishna's kindness, where Krishna is saying, I am transcendental, I'll remain transcendental, but just for your deliverance, I am ready to appear in a form in which I can be perceived. But somehow the Kali Yuga ego is so strong, it does not allow us to accept the simplest of processes. So it is mentioned, Naratvam Durlabham, Loke Vidya Tatra Sudurlabha. Very rare to get a human form of life. Within the human form of life, vidya is very difficult. Knowledge is very difficult. Most people are ignorant. Out of lot of people who have vidya, shilam cha durlabham tatra. Good behavior, character is very rare. Most times vidya produces avidya in behavior. It produces pride. Very rare for a knowledgeable, intelligent person to be humble. And then it is mentioned, Vinayas Tatra Sudurlava. Humbleness, humility is the peak rare symptom of somebody in the human form of life. So, most people are in ignorance and then some people are attracted by knowledge. Somebody who is intelligent, somebody who has all answers to all questions is very attractive. But even the most knowledgeable person, you get put off by him if he does not have good behavior. Sometimes some intelligent people have good behavior, you get attracted to them, but then they may not have true, genuine humility. Modesty, character is something that is tangible outside, and humility is something that is inside, and it takes time, it takes fine vision to detect. So humility is very rare in this world. I have spectacles and I am seeing a yellow flower. So if I have a blue shaded spectacle, it appears green to me. If I have reddish tinted spectacles, that yellow flower appears orange to me. And two people with these two colored spectacles can keep fighting for the rest of eternity. This is a green flower, somebody says this is an orange flower. And both of them are true. The thing is, your senses are covered. So we have pure eyes, the soul has senses. But they are covered with this flesh eyes. So it's like these eyes covered by spectacles. And that's why we see the whole world in a colored way. So either somebody has to come and remove those spectacles, or somebody has to teach us how to remove our own spectacles ourselves. Till that golden day in our life, we'll keep arguing. That's why if you see in Chaitanya Leela, so many times this comes up where people are arguing, and then Lord Chaitanya says, this is not the way to understand the absolute truth. So the Mimamsakas, the Nyayakas, so Patanjali will keep on arguing, liberation or attaining Brahman arises from matter. The logicians will keep on arguing that liberation is an actual destruction of consciousness. The Sankhya philosophers will keep on arguing liberation is soul separating itself from qualities, or essentially soul separating itself from matter. You separate them both, that is Sankhya. Or the Mimamsakas, they are those who believe in karma. So they'll keep arguing that the highest goal actually is attainment of Swarga. You enjoy your actions. That is what is the goal. And as all these people keep arguing, the devotees will chant, the devotees will hear, the devotees will eat, and they can get the highest revelation of the absolute truth. So in Krishna Leela, the demon Trinavarta, he stands for this mentality of arguing. So then, you know, he creates a storm in Vrindavan. So it is mentioned, Muhurtam abhavat goshtam rajasa tamasa vritam. So goshtam is that village. One muhurta, around 48 minutes, for around 1 hour, Trinavarta had covered the rajasa tamasa vritam. Raja means dust particles, is called raja. Vraja raja, we say. And raja is also rajoguna. And tamasa vritam, he covered Vraj, Vrindavan, with darkness. So when there is false arguments, the truth is covered. There is darkness, there is ignorance. So they are arguing about truth. They are arguing about reality. They are saying this is what is reality. But by arguments over reality, which are not a revelation, they are attributions. They are, you are saying this is how the truth is. So it's very interesting. These people are fighting, arguing over what is truth. But when that truth is being thrown, it is producing ignorance. It is producing darkness in Vrindavan. Rajasa tamasa vrita. And then at one point of time, when Krishna is taken by Trinavarta, then at one point of time Krishna takes this decision to choke Trinavarta's throat. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions, Trinavarta represents false pride that comes from useless argumentation. Mind you, we are not against argumentation. This is useless argumentation. There is no conclusive argumentation. These are, absolute truth is beyond our senses. So none of us with our present senses can conclusively say what is the absolute truth. It is only when the supreme truth descends that we can say. Trinavarta represents the tendency to have wrangling debates. Debate for debate's sake. Not what is right, but who is right. And also, Trinavarta represents a tendency for dry reasoning. Just reasoning, trying to speculate and trying to justify whatever you want to. So, many times in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, especially because we are Gaudiyas and he is the recent Yuga avatar, so there is a lot to learn from him. Srila Prabhupada says, even if we don't accept Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as a supreme personality of Godhead, even if we accept him as a great saintly person, we can learn from him, we can benefit from him. One class he says that. So even as an acharya, if we learn from Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, so many times when he was face to face with people who were expert in arguing, tarkavadis, tattvavadis, Prakashananda Saraswati, he chose not to debate. So in Udupi, he explained. He said, you are saying that following Varnashram system is the means and liberation is the goal. But then he explained, this is not the truth. But with Prakashananda Saraswati in Varanasi, he said, I am not a fit person to learn. My guru saw me as a fool. So if Lord Chaitanya has that mood, then we might say, oh, the Supreme Lord can act like that. But there's another person who also behaved like that. The illiterate Brahman in Srirangam. The illiterate Brahman in Srirangam, he said, actually I cannot read. But Guru has told me. My spiritual master has told me, you read the Bhagavad Gita every day. So what to do? I cannot disobey my spiritual master. So it is mentioned, not in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, one class Srila Prabhupada explains, actually he was reading the Bhagavad Gita upside down. He could not even understand the right orientation of the letter, the print. So he is reading the Bhagavad Gita upside down, but there are tears in his eyes. And then Lord Chaitanya says, okay, you are illiterate, you cannot read the Bhagavad Gita. But how can there be tears in your eyes then? So whenever I take the Gita in my hand, I imagine the form of Krishna. He is the Supreme Lord, but he has a whipping stick in his hands. How can he be so kind? And that's what produces it. Lord Chaitanya said, you have actually understood the Gita. You are following the orders of the spiritual master. So just by his humble submission to the request of the Acharya, to the request of, just do this. Whether you understand it or not, does not matter. Just do it because I am telling you to do. So that humble submission, if somebody can get, Lord Chaitanya says, you cannot read a single letter of the Gita, but you have understood the Gita. Why did Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu take sannyas? So the Adi Leela mentions, Lord Chaitanya came here to give Shuddha Prema, Prema Sankirtan, not Nama Sankirtan. Many times we feel he gave Nama Sankirtan, he gave Prema Sankirtan. So there are many other personalities who emphasize on chanting of the holy names, but Lord Chaitanya's process is to fire that innate love for Krishna, the attraction for Krishna, Vrajvasi's love for Krishna. So it is mentioned that he is already giving as Nimai Pandit, after he came from Gaya, he is already distributing Harinam. They are having massive Sankirtans at night. So many people want to enter that. The milk drinking Brahmachari, the mother-in-law of Shrivas Pandit, Gopal Chapal, they were in there, Navadeep. They wanted to enter. So it's a big event. It's not some secret event that only 5 or 6 people know. So if he was already doing Harinam Sankirtan, what is the need to take sannyas then? The need to take sannyas is, Lord Chaitanya was thinking, when I am doing these Harinam Sankirtans, there's this shloka, I am trying to recollect it. Mayavadi karma nishtha kutarkika jan. So Mayavadis are not coming to this Harinam Sankirtan that I am having at Srivas's home. Karma nishtha, those who believe in fruitive activities, they are not coming here. They feel, no, we have to do all our pujas and all that. And kutarkika jan, those who are into logic, those who are always into having competitions based on how my perspective is right and how your perspective is not right. That's what Nadia was famous for. Olympics of arguments. Massive competitions of arguments. So it mentions Mayavadhi Karmanishtha Kutarkika Jan. And it says all these people, the second line also mentions one or two categories. Adhama, Paduya, something like that. The lowest of the students also. So even the students have so much pride, because one of the students of Lord Chaitanya, he is just a Vyakaran student. He is not a Rasa student. Lord Chaitanya, as a teacher in Nadia, he is not teaching the Rasas, the 12 Rasas, 5 primary Rasas. It's simple Sanskrit grammar, Vyakaran. That is the basis of a language, Vyakaran. But as he is teaching Vyakaran, there is enough pride in one of his students to one day have the audacity to teach the teacher that this is not what you are supposed to do. Haven't you read the scriptures? The scriptures advise to chant the holy names of Vishnu, not the holy names of his devotees, gopis. So Kali Yuga is quite an interesting situation where the people who are in ignorance, they believe and they have firm conviction, we already have decoded everything. So one of Lord Chaitanya's own students argued with him and advised him on what to do. So then Lord Chaitanya is saying, it is to catch these people, I will accept sannyas.
He was thinking in his heart, how will I catch Mayavadis? How will I catch Karmanishthas? How will I catch logicians? How will I catch the proud students who actually should be submissive and receive knowledge, but they will keep on arguing? It is out of that compassion for these people that Lord Chaitanya accepted sannyas. Otherwise, very difficult. But even if Lord Chaitanya accepted sannyas, and as a sannyasi, he was distributing the holy name, at least 500 years back, the culture was, when you see a sannyasi, you accept from him. Today, somehow, unfortunately, even that much culture may not stay for a long time. Somebody has a strong tendency to argue. Because this question will naturally arise, oh, you are talking about this humble submission and all that. But we are also Kali Yuga products. We have a strong tendency to argue. If somebody has a strong tendency to argue, my humble proposal is that, argue with your senses. When your senses pull you in some direction, have a debate with your senses. Have a talk with your senses. You want me to look in that direction, what good is there in that direction? I have looked 1,000 times in that direction, no benefit, only agitation. Fight with your senses. If you are really fond of debates, have a debate with your mind. Your mind will tell you, let's think of something. Thinking, feeling, willing of different subject matter. Have a debate with your mind. What good is there in that kind of thinking, feeling and willing? Why don't I think, feel and will related to Krishna? So if you see some of the devotees, we'll just have, we started late because of the long purport. Take example of Vibhishan. So Vibhishan is born in a Rakshasa family. But then he has that pious background. And at one point of time, he's so compassionate. He's constantly throughout his whole life advising Ravan, kindly do this. Yes. And Ravan just rejects it. So at one point of time he says, you are like a snake born in my family. Get lost from here. He just throws him out. So I believe at that time there must have been a debate in his mind. What do I do now? Should I compromise on my ideals? Live a comfortable life? Or should I compromise on my comforts and lead an ideal life? So he underwent a debate inside. One in that debate with his mind, one in that debate with his senses, made that journey out of Lanka. And then that internal victory led to an external victory. Later he became the king of Lanka. Lord Ramchandra crowned him as the king of Lanka. The first chapter of the Gita is essentially Arjuna's arguments with Krishna, but he's siding with his mind. His mind is giving arguments how not to surrender to Krishna. So he's talking, you know, ventriloquism. You have a puppet in your hand and it appears that the puppet is talking. You do that with your hands. But actually it is the person who's speaking. But you can very rarely detect it. So many times, you know, we are talking, yes, but actually the voice is that of the mind. The mind is talking and we feel we are talking. So Arjuna is basically representing the mind which refuses to surrender to Krishna in that first chapter. He's giving very nice arguments, shastric arguments, logical arguments. But at one point of time in 2.7 he says, now I'm not going to debate with Krishna because what is the fruit of all that debate with Krishna? He says, actually I don't know what is right and I don't know what is wrong. I'm confused. So all those nice arguments in first chapter, 2.1, 2.2, 2.3, if you see, he says, well, the last argument that I have is, I'm confused. So, with all those nice arguments, with all that knowledge and with all those very pious sounding objections, the end result is confusion. And that is the time when he switches his role, instead of playing or voicing the desires of his mind to Krishna, he fights with his mind. And he comes to the conclusion, I need to win over my mind. So he says, Karpanya dosha. It's very interesting how he says, my dosha is Karpanya. Karpanya comes from the root word Kripana. So Kripana means miser. And Prabhupada's translation also he says, miserly weakness. So I was just thinking, what is miserly weakness? You can just say weakness. Who is a miser? Miser is a person who has a lot of wealth, but he does not spend his wealth. So being poor is a crime. Daridra is a dosha. Because when you are poor, nobody respects you. You suffer a lot. But one advantage of being a poor person is only you suffer. A miser who is actually a rich person but he is a miser, he makes the whole world suffer. He suffers himself. He does not give in charity to anybody needy. So they suffer. And people see that he has money, he can give, but he does not give. So mental suffering. So actually a rich person who is a miser makes the whole world suffer. So miserly weakness means, Arjuna is saying, actually I have a lot of wealth. I am a wealthy person. But karpanya dosha, I have the dosha, I have the fault of being a miserly person. So what is your wealth and what is your karpanya? My wealth is, I have free will. This is one wealth that can never be taken away from the spirit soul. Why? Just because you are a part and parcel of Krishna. Inherent in you is free will. Krishna is Swarat. You are minutely Swarat. So I have this infinite wealth of free will. Any time, any moment, any situation, I can take a decision to turn myself towards Krishna. There is nothing in this world that can bind me and tell me, you cannot surrender to Krishna right now. One time His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj was speaking. He was saying, Maya tricks the devotees and the non-devotees in different ways. Maya tricks non-devotees by convincing them to not surrender to Krishna. And the same Maya tricks devotees by convincing them to delay their surrender to Krishna. Not today, tomorrow. So, miserly weakness. I have this wealth of free will. Any situation, anywhere, I can take a decision. Okay, enough of it. From today onwards, I accept what Krishna says. I receive knowledge. I don't attribute knowledge. So he's saying, till now I misused that. I did not use that wealth. That free will, I have kept it suppressed. My mind is telling me what to do. My mind is telling me to argue with my spiritual master and the Supreme Lord. Both Krishna is the same person for Arjuna. So he then says, now I have understood my miserly weakness. Now I'll become udar. Now I'll become non-miserly. I'll become a very charitable person. I'll use my wealth of free will. And then he says, I surrender to you. So surrendering to Krishna is use or charity of the greatest wealth that we have. Rukmini, when she was being forced to marry Shishupal by her brother, she must also be thinking, can I argue with my brother? Let me have an argument with my brother. I don't want to fight Shishupal. Look at him, look at Krishna. Tribhuna, he is the best looking person in the three worlds. And the Shishupal is an ordinary person. I don't want to marry him. But Rukmini said, Rukmi, you know, he's already fixed up. He's already convinced. There's no point in arguing with him. Let me surrender to Krishna. There's no point in arguing with somebody who's already not ready to accept. He's already decided. In fact, it is mentioned Rukmini's father had also decided that she should marry Krishna. He was also pro-Krishna. But he was overpowered by Rukmi. Rukmi was a very powerful person. He just overpowered his old father. And he's selling off his sister to Shishupal for a political alliance. So Rukmini is also thinking, should I fight, should I argue, or should I surrender to Krishna? She chooses surrender to Krishna. I don't have time to fight. I'm losing time. Tomorrow night is my marriage proposed. So she catches hold of a trustworthy Brahman. Writes a very loving letter expressing her emotions. And she herself admits, you might call me a shameless person. How can a girl of a very nice dynasty, respectable dynasty, write a love letter to somebody before marriage? Not good. You may call me shameless, but that's what I am. Why? Because surrendering to Krishna, the world may call it a shameless activity. It is the need of the hour. So in our own lives also, we'll face a situation where somebody will tell us, how can you do this shameless thing? How can you surrender to God? There are so many other things to do. But Rukmini is giving a precedent to us. Rukmini is saying, catch hold of a trustworthy person. Who is a trustworthy person? A Brahman, a Vaishnava. Catch hold of a Vaishnava. Write a letter to Krishna. give that letter to that person and say, please carry this letter from me to Krishna. And Krishna says, if you send your letter to me through one of my trustworthy representatives, somebody whom I trust, somebody who is clean, I accept that letter, I come. So it's very interesting how Krishna rode on his chariot all the way from Dwarka to Kaundinyapur to abduct Rukmini, risking bad reputation for himself. Here is a god who kidnaps girls. But he's okay with it. If the devotee can be shameless, in the reciprocation, Krishna is also shameless. We're discussing in Vidyapeeth class how sometimes Krishna gives adversities in the life of devotees, gives difficulties in the life of devotees just to glorify them, just to make them shine. Similarly, sometimes the devotees also give difficulties in the life of Krishna to glorify him. So Bhishma is shooting arrows at Krishna. He's giving difficulties to Krishna, but as a devotee. How? To show to the whole world, when it comes to saving my devotee, I give up my own vow. So he's troubling Krishna to glorify Krishna. So Krishna's bhakta vatsalya shone out. Just because Bhishma was hurling arrows at Krishna. So Krishna is into reciprocation. So Rukmini acted shamelessly. She wrote a letter. So Krishna also became a shameless abductor of Rukmini. So arguments won't lead us anywhere. Another undesirable result of this argumentative mentality is that when two respectable people who are to be, in the words of today's commentator, His Holiness Hridayananda Maharaj, supposed authorities. So the whole world sees them as authorities and they are arguing with each other. That puts off common people. So I was saying how people keep fighting about relative truth, then they come to a conclusion, oh, this world is relative, now I have to go to a higher level of inquiring into the absolute truth. And they approach some knowledgeable people, respectable people, for knowledge, for guidance, and they see when respectable people who are supposed to guide us, when they fight with each other, it puts ordinary people off. Now there is no hope for them. So it's not good for those who are fighting, it's not good for the world in general. Then what to do? Use your argumentative tendency to fight with your mind. Use your argumentative tendency to fight with your dirty desires in the heart. So no, I don't need this. And how to do it? Surrender to Krishna. So just by the simple process of chanting Krishna's holy name, just by hearing this Krishna Katha attentively, as much as possible, genuinely, we can attract Krishna's mercy, and then we can cross beyond these competing, conflicting philosophies that have some place in this world, because there are people at different levels of spiritual evolution. So then some people are attracted to karma mimamsa, some people are attracted to nyaya. But for those who are interested in pure gold, 24 karat and more, there is Lord Chaitanya's philosophy. So somebody was saying, if you have black money, we have an option, give it to Krishna. If you have white money, we have an option, give it to Balaram. And if you already are very smart and you have converted your black money and white money into gold, so you have yellow money, give it to Lord Gauranga, he is golden. So this is Yuga Avatar, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he is waiting for all of us to follow his golden message. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki.